The new road was quite bumpy and full of stones, and each time they hit one, the dodecahedron bounced into the air and landed on one of his faces with a sulk or a smile or a laugh or a frown, depending upon which one it was. "We'll soon be there," he announced happily after one of his short flights. "Welcome to the land of numbers." "It doesn't look very inviting," the bug remarked, for as they climbed higher and higher, not a tree or a blade of grass could be seen anywhere. Only the rocks remained. "Is this the place where numbers are made?" asked Milo as the car lurched again, and this time the dodecahedron sailed off down the mountainside, head over heels and grunt over grimace, until he landed sad side up at what looked like the entrance to a cave. "They're not made," he replied, as if nothing had happened. "You'll have to dig for them. Don't you know anything at all about numbers?"
"Well, I don't think they're very important," snapped Milo, too embarrassed to admit the truth.
"Not important?" roared the dodecahedron, turning red with fury. "Could you have tea for two without the two? Or three blind mice without the three? Would there be four corners of the earth if there weren't a four? And how would you sail the seven seas without a seven?"
"All I meant was," began Milo, but the dodecahedron, overcome with emotion and shouting furiously, carried right on.
"If you had high hopes, how would you know how high they were? And did you know that narrow escapes come in all different widths? Would you travel the whole wide world without ever knowing how wide it was? And how could you do anything at long last," he concluded, waving his arms over his head, "without knowing how long the last was? Why, numbers are the most beautiful and valuable things in the world. Just follow me, and I'll show you."
He turned on his heel and stalked off into the cave.
"Come along! Come along!" he shouted from the dark hole. "I can't wait for you all day."
And in a moment, they'd followed him into the mountain. It took several minutes for their eyes to become accustomed to the dim light, and during that time, strange scratching, scraping, tapping, scuffling noises could be heard all around them. "Put these on," instructed the dodecahedron, handing each of them a helmet with a flashlight attached to the top.
"Where are we going?" whispered Milo,
for it seemed like the kind of place in which you whispered.
"We are here," he replied with a sweeping gesture. "This is the numbers mine."
Milo squinted into the darkness and saw for the first time that they had entered a vast cavern lit only by a soft, eerie glow from the great stalactites which hung ominously from the ceiling. Passages and corridors honeycombed the walls and wound their way from floor to ceiling up and down the sides of the cave. And everywhere he looked, Milo saw little men, no bigger than himself, busy digging and chopping, shoveling and scraping, pulling and tugging carts full of stone from one place to another.
"Right this way," instructed the dodecahedron, "and watch where you step."
As he spoke, his voice echoed and re-echoed and re-echoed again, mixing its sound with the buzz of activity all around them. Tok trotted along next to Milo, and the humbug, stepping daintily, followed behind. "Whose mine is it?" asked Milo, stepping around two of the loaded wagons.
"By the 4,827,659 hairs on my head, it's mine, of course,"
bellowed a voice from across the cavern, and striding toward them came a figure who could only have been the mathematician. He was dressed in a long, flowing robe covered entirely with complex mathematical equations, and a tall, pointed cap that made him look very wise. In his left hand, he carried a long staff with a pencil point at one end and a large rubber eraser at the other.
"It's a lovely mine," apologized the humbug,
who was always intimidated by loud noises.
"The biggest number mine in the kingdom," said the math magician proudly.
"Are there any precious stones in it?" asked Milo excitedly.
"Precious stones?" he roared, even louder than before.
And then he leaned over toward Milo and whispered softly,
"By the 8,247,312 threads in my robe, I'll say there are. Look here."
He reached into one of the carts and pulled out a small object, which he polished vigorously on his robe. When he held it up to the light, it sparkled brightly.
"But that's a five,"
objected Milo, for that was certainly what it was.
Exactly, agreed the mathematician. As valuable a jewel as you'll find anywhere. Look at some of the others.
He scooped up a great handful of stones and poured them into Milo's arms. They included all the numbers from 1 to 9 and even an assortment of zeros.
We dig them and polish them right here,
volunteered the dodecahedron, pointing to a group of workers busily employed at the buffing wheels,
and then we send them all over the world. Marvelous, aren't they?
They are exceptional, said Tok, who had a special fondness for numbers.
So that's where they come from, said Milo, looking in awe at the glittering collection of numbers. He returned them to the dodecahedron as carefully as possible, but as he did, one dropped to the floor with a smash and broke in two. The humbug winced, and Milo looked terribly concerned.
Oh, don't worry about that, said the mathematician as he scooped up the pieces. We use the broken ones for fractions.
Haven't you any diamonds or emeralds or rubies?
Asked the bug irritably, for he was quite disappointed in what he'd seen so far.
Yes, indeed, the mathematician replied, leading them to the rear of the cave. Right this way.
There, piled into enormous mounds that reached almost to the ceiling, were not only diamonds and emeralds and rubies, but also sapphires, amethysts, topazes, moonstones, and garnets. It was the most amazing mass of wealth that any of them had ever seen.
Such a terrible nuisance, sighed the mathematician, and no one can think of what to do with them. So we just keep digging them up and throwing them out.
No, he said, taking a silver whistle from his pocket and blowing it loudly. Let's have some lunch. And for the first time in his life, the astonished bug couldn't think of a thing to say.